I kind of bristle. I just don't like it. But that's kind of an American perspective. Christ comes as king in a different kind of king, which we'll talk about in a minute. But if you're looking for somebody to overturn the kings you've met, you need a king to overturn kings. America tossed off its king. What about all those places and peoples who haven't yet gotten rid of their king, or an autocrat, or a principle, or a way of being, or a polity? Something holds your people back. And knowing that there is an order that exists beyond the one in front of you, and there's something stronger and more powerful than what people claim is powerful and strong, is a source of a revolution all its own, much more spectacular and just and loving than anything we've come up with. And if I can find that Christ the King, I'd celebrate this holiday a little better. When I see him as just a Palestinian carpenter who manages to get a crown, well, it's as cheap as any earthly institution. But when you find somebody who turned the world upside down, claimed a kingship those kings can't understand, you find something altogether different, and a whole new world opens up. That's the world we're called to live into, that other world. The world that doesn't look like this one, that isn't full of kings and violence and pain and vying for, you know, to wear a very elaborate hat. It's giving up the idea of having hats that distinguish us from one another. Giving up kings entirely. A king that ends kings. And thus is the only one worthy of the name. That's why I like the Vanity so much, the psalm we read today, where it identifies God as king, as the only one who can occupy that place in our hearts, that place in our polity. It's a deeper and grander revolutionary spirit that's captured in Christianity. Oh, we're ready to go? Oh, lovely. Okay, well, then that's what we'll do. But there you go, a mini sermon on why Christ the King is a powerful revolutionary holiday and even anti-fascist in its inception. So. Now for the real sermon. We all ready? Of sorts. Take those off. I hate Sorting Hat. Those who've read the Harry Potter fantasy series or caught the movies, the good ones anyway, the first eight, know of the great Sorting Hat. The Hogwarts School for Witchcraft and Wizardry is divided into four houses, each named for one of the founders of this educational institution, which incidentally fails to prepare any of these young wizards for the real world. When a student enters Hogwarts, a sentient hat is placed upon the head of the student, who reads the student's mind or heart and announces which house they will be joining. The brave go to Gryffindor. The loyal ones go to Hufflepuff. The clever go to Ravenclaw, and the ambitious go to Slytherin. So that's jocks, normies, nerds, and troublemakers. The good, the nice, the smart, and the evil. It's a terrible system of education. The best way to educate a populace of incredibly powerful people, all of them carrying lethal weapons to school in the form of magic wands, is to sort them on the basis of their dominant humors in an institution that should be designed to help them sort through their changing bodies and developing minds. That's hardly improvement on the cliques of the Breakfast Club from the 1980s. I mean, don't you just sort of live into these expectations when you tell a child they're evil and put them around other evil kids? Well, gee, it's not an accident that all the trouble seems to come out of Slytherin. And it's a dread reinforcement of the British imperial class system, and since magic is genetic, even scientific racism. Maybe I'm taking this too seriously, but it's a public violation of personal space that is the ceremony with the Sorting Hat. It's sentient, and it's placed on a child's head. Does he even wash? I hate the Sorting Hat. And yet here is an image of the Last Judgment. The New Testament image of the Last Judgment. With God playing Sorting Hat. Shepherds who kept mixed flocks would separate them in the evening. Sheep and goats have different needs, and they would be separated so that those needs could be tended to, and so they wouldn't graze over one another. And that metaphor is adopted. As Jesus stands in the Last Judgment as Son of Man, a great King above all gods, seated at God's right hand in the heavenly places, far above all rule and authority and power and dominion, above every name that is named, not only in this age, but here in the age to come. And he's put all things under his feet and has made him the head over all things for the church. And he's here to separate the sheep from the goats. I don't know if I like this cosmic sorting hat. But is that what's going on here? What are the sheep? What are the goats? And who are these least of these that I'm supposed to be tending to? This is not a usual king. This is a king we haven't met anywhere else. And this king calls us to serve him by serving the least of these. What manner of sorting is this king doing? This king does what those who seek to exploit us falsely promise, but never deliver on, no matter how many weapons, votes, dollars we provide them with. This king says, I will seek the lost, and I will bring back the strayed. I will bind up the injured. I will strengthen the weak. But the fat and the strong I will destroy. I will feed them with justice. This is no sorting hat. This is a king, a lord, a judge, a God who ends the sorting once and for all. We have to pay attention to what Jesus means when he says, the least of these. There are a number of ways to interpret this. One is to mean Christians. In the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus often refers to the little ones. The little ones. And he means his disciples and those followers along the way. And so it is when the nations gather to be judged at the end. We read that as Gentiles, the nations. That's how Matthew refers to them. And the least of these is the superlative form of the little ones. These are Jesus' disciples, even Christ himself. Did the Gentiles welcome Christianity when it came to them? Take comfort as Christians you experience hardship or persecution, because those who persecute you will be judged based on how they receive Jesus and Jesus' followers in their lives. And you will in fact be judged on your ability to welcome help, on how you helped those helping you. We don't like the idea that in ministering, we are also ministered to. We'd rather be the one ministering, because that means we have something that someone else doesn't have. And it's easier to be on that end of things. It's harder to be on the receiving end. It's harder to admit vulnerability. It's harder to admit hunger and thirst, nakedness, vulnerability, and weakness before another. You ever notice how awkward it gets on Maundy Thursday when we start washing feet? Can't do that in social distancing, and I know all of us breathed a little sigh of relief that other people wouldn't be seeing our feet. There are times when we turn people away, even when we're at our weakest, because we don't want them to see us like this. When Jesus mentions the least of these, he's talking about whether or not we are able to receive help. Do we welcome it? Do we invite it? But most of us see the least of these as a spectrum. an extreme case that tells us that we must be serving everyone. No one is unimportant in this world. Each has dignity, and no one can be overlooked. From the greatest, who will probably serve anyway, because it's to our advantage to serve our social superiors, to the least among them, who we're not likely to serve or even associate with. We are called to seek and serve Christ in all persons. And since we don't know where Christ may appear, we serve everyone, because we don't know who the least are. We don't know where Christ will be. So we'd better make sure we're covered by serving everyone. Those who are vulnerable, those who are hungry, those who are thirsty, those who are in need, those who are homeless, cold, ill, or captive. So it could be Christians and calling us to welcome help. It could be everybody. Or God could be calling us to serve everybody, but prioritizing the least. As we said, you know, you'll probably serve the great in our society out of selfishness because there's something to be gained by it. And you'll serve many because you'll recognize Christ in them, or at least yourself. But what of those who have nothing to offer us? Who don't look like us or think like us? What about those who make us feel awkward or uncomfortable, who challenge us, who make us feel ill at ease, who make us feel guilty? What about those who are least among us because we put them there and kept them there and abandoned them to that status? They are hungry and thirsty and in need, and homeless and cold and ill and in prison because we put them there. Truly, I tell you, whatever you did to them, you did to me. Because that's where Christ was. Christ came among us not to be served, but to serve, and that's where we must go, and that's what we must do. Because that's where we are too, except by the grace of God. The Christ who sits in judgment was himself judged by us among the least. We are called to risk embarrassment and humiliation and foolishness in ending the sorting, in turning, as they say in Acts, the world upside down, reshuffling the deck back into new deck order. We're not to be shuffled into sheep and goats, but to look within ourselves and find what is in prison or ill or hungry or thirsty, and look into others where there is thirst and hunger and imprisonment and illness, and minister to it. Jesus didn't come to sort people into sheep and goats, but to take our souls and sort them into sheep and goats, to minister to that weakness, to intervene in our lives, and by extension, give us the strength to minister to one another. I think it's time, perhaps, that we recover the notion of Episcopalian. Episcopalian comes from the word episkopos, which we translate bishop. The reason we're Episcopalian is because we're Protestants that keep the apostolic succession of legitimacy through bishops, and we keep that institution. Episkopos comes from a Greek, two Greek word, you know, roots, epi and skopos, you know, epi meaning after or over, and then skopos, look, see. So the bishops were the people who oversaw the ministries occurring in their area. There's another word that comes from that, and it's a word you encounter here. Visit. When I was in prison, you visited me. The word there is look after, not oversee. We are defined by our bishops. What would our church look and sound like if we were defined by looking after each other? If that's what Episcopal meant. We will not be judged by our confession of faith. We will not be judged by our position, our success, our wealth. Nor will our church be judged solely by its relative position, average Sunday attendance, or budget, but by how well we looked after one another. Did we make tangible differences in people's lives? Did we sort ourselves into sheep and goats, or did we look for the goats in other people's lives and help them sort that? People look at this passage and they see eternal fire or eternal life and wonder about a God who would sort us into hellfire or heaven. But maybe God is asking us telling us that a life lived selfishly, narrowly, is itself hell. An abundant, grateful life shared broadly is a foretaste of the promise and itself the kingdom. A people in prison, divided and enslaved, as our collect says, calls us to visit, to look after. What if we stopped trying to oversee one another and started looking after one another? Whatever we do to the least among us, to the least within ourselves, we do to and for Christ. What will happen if we stop trying to play sorting hat with one another? What if we stop trying to oversee one another and start looking after one another? Well, I imagine you'll see something like the corporal works of mercy. You'll see people feeding the hungry. You'll see people giving drink to the thirsty. You'll see people welcoming strangers, clothing the naked, healing the sick, and visiting that which is in prison. Catholic tradition has a seventh: bury the dead. But I submit to you that when we feed the hungry, when we give drink to the thirsty, when we welcome strangers, clothe the naked, heal the sick, and visit those in prison, we raise that which is dead and dying. My God isn't a sorting hat. He's my shepherd and my king. Amen.